This is day five of this June 2015 7-day session. We'll resume reading from the book Zen Letters, which is a collection of letters from the 11th century Chinese Zen master Yuan Wu, translated by J.C. Cleary and Thomas Cleary. The present perception is the truth, but the truth is beyond this perception. If you are attached to perception, then this is a perception. It is not arriving at the truth. Those who arrive at truth transcend perception, but they manage to use perception without dwelling in perception. When you pass directly through perception and get free of it, it is all the fundamental truth. This may sound a little complicated, but of course it can't be. If it's the truth, it's got to be simple. Most people, when they hear a sound, like the warbling of the bird outside, don't just hear the sound. First of all, the sound has to thread its way through the conditioning of our mind. And then immediately after the sound comes a thought, or an association, or a memory, or some secondary thing happening. And then often that will lead to another thought, and then another, and we've boarded a train of thoughts that takes us away from the present, the sounds that are happening now, and that happened 3 seconds ago. This is a very deep habit of clouding the original direct experience of hearing, adding to it, complicating it. The word in Japanese is nen, a very difficult word to translate. We can talk about it, though. The simple, direct experience of hearing the sound, that's the first nen, and then the second nen is something on top of that. Already with the second nen, we've strayed from the first nen experience of half a second later. We're still back there. We're half a second back there because of the second nen, and then the third nen, and so forth. The train of nens, subsequent nens. So this is what how we stray from true perception. In the first nen, that is what Yuan Wu means here by the present. The key word is present. The present perception is the truth. There it is. Direct experience. But the truth is beyond this perception. It's not just in the hearing. If you are attached to perception, that's when we get into the subsequent nen. Then this is a perception. It is not the arriving at the truth. Zen Master Rinzai said, just learn to cut off successive nen, and this is worth more than 10 years of pilgrimage. the Japanese Zen master Basui said, cut, 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 cut. Those who arrive at truth transcend perception, but they manage to use perception without dwelling in perception, getting caught in it. When you pass directly through perception and get free of it, it is all the fundamental truth. If you can just keep present, keep awareness present, moment by moment, just not just moment by moment, millisecond by millisecond, then it's all it, this, just this. In the Mumonkan, case number 16, the sound of the bell, Mumon addresses the same matter in his commentary. In practicing Zen, you should avoid being swayed by sounds and forms. Even though you may attain insight by hearing a sound or seeing a form, this is simply the ordinary way of things. Nor is it anything to talk about when a Zen person is able to master sounds and control forms and thus clearly see the reality of everything and be wonderfully free in everything he does. To master sounds and control forms, then, is to not be caught by them, to hear and see, to notice, without getting caught. This is actually a legitimate practice of just hearing. Records tell us that Avalokiteshvara, known in Japan as Kanzeon or Kanon, in China, Guanyin, but originally a deeply enlightened disciple of the Buddha, that Avalokiteshvara came to enlightenment through the practice of hearing, just hearing, just hearing. But then in his commentary, Mumon continues, but though this is so, just tell me, does the sound come to the ear, or does the ear go to the sound? Even if you are able to transcend both sound and silence, how do you speak of that fact? If you listen with your ear, it is hard to hear truly. If you hear with your eye, then you are intimate at last. So our senses, without emphasizing hearing too much, our senses, hearing, seeing, smelling, tasting, touching, and thinking is considered a sixth sense, a sixth way, a form of perception, apprehension. Our senses reveal our true nature, but our true nature is not limited to the senses. If so, then everyone with hearing and seeing and so forth would know this truth. when Yuan Wu says in his first sentence, the present perception is the truth, but the truth is beyond this perception, what would be beyond pure hearing? Continues, this truth is not being or non-being. It is not speech or silence. Yet it can manifest both being and non-being, both speech and silence. It is forever constant and unchanging. Therefore, Yunmen said, he's quoting Yunmen, it cannot be existent when you speak of it and non-existent when you don't, or existent when you think of it and non-existent when you don't. So it, this, is not dependent on our speaking of it or thinking of it. He continues, you must subtly arrive at this truth and get its great function. Always let transcendent wisdom appear, whether you are speaking or silent, whatever you are doing. So, for one who is working on Mu, this means always let Mu appear, whether you are speaking or silent, whatever you are doing. Of course, maintaining awareness of Mu while speaking is difficult, to say the least. And this wouldn't be where you want to draw a line in the sand and try to master that. There's so many other opportunities, moment by moment in our daily lives, opportunities in the midst of simple activities where we can bring this awareness of Mu, if you're working on Mu, or another koan, if you're working on another koan, without trying to keep Mu in the mind while in conversation or while reading, for example. And he says, why would you say that it is close at hand when you are in your teacher's presence, but far away when you are in the countryside? As you go directly forward, naturally you will encounter it wherever you are. You will encounter it wherever you are. It can't be. This mind cannot be limited to one place. How could it be? Continues, well, also, it can't be in Sesshin more than outside Sesshin. In Sesshin, our awareness is stronger, but this is no more here than there. He continues, all the enlightened ones and ancestral teachers take this one true thing very seriously. It is spread among beings of all potentials, high and low, noble and lowly, without any preferences or aversions. It is in all the myriad kinds of action, naturally real, clear, and complete. If you make a special thing out of your views of Buddha Dharma and mystic marvels, then there is a lack. But if you are able to refrain from creating arbitrary views and are clean and naked like this, then it is completely revealed. If this matter were in words, then it should be definable in a single statement with no further change. Why would there be thousands and thousands of sayings imparted by enlightened adepts with no end to them? From this we know that it is not within words, but we need to use words to illustrate this matter. Sharp-spirited people should directly comprehend this idea. Yeah, it's not like some secret password in a fraternal organization that we have to keep secret and only hand out. It's not in the words. If it were in the words and could awaken people, I would just tell you. Why wouldn't I? It has to come from one's own understanding. And that understanding is not limited to words. Going back to the koan mu, there is no answer to mu. It's not that kind of question. No one has really found an answer in the ordinary sense. But yes, he can come to understanding of it. Those who realize transcendence pass through words and phrases and can make them come to life. They can use one saying as 100,000 sayings, or use 100,000 sayings as one saying. In Zen, we distinguish between live words and dead words. Dead words are explanatory. Dead words are not informed by our own direct experience. So quoting a master without the experience is really dead words. But having the experience, then we can make those words our own. This is why masters like Yuan Wu and many others we've read from in Taisho are often quoting previous masters, because they're not quoting previous masters. They're just using their words. It's their own understanding. Next letter. When Bodhidharma came from the West, bringing the Zen transmission to China, he didn't set up written or spoken formulations. He only pointed directly to the human mind. It's a very famous phrase used in reference to Bodhidharma's teaching, directly pointing. If we speak of direct pointing, this just refers to what is inherent in everyone. The whole essence appears responsively from within the shell of ignorance. This is no different in ordinary people than in all the sages since time immemorial. It is what we call the natural, real, inherent nature, fundamentally pure, luminous, and sublime. It swallows up and spits out all of space. It is a single, solid realm that stands out alone, free of the senses and their objects. Just detach from thoughts and cut off sentiments and transcend the ordinary conventions. Use your own inherent power and take up its great capacity and great wisdom right where you are. It is like letting go when you are hanging from a mile-high cliff, releasing your body and not relying on anything anymore. Just detach from thoughts. Actually, this can be misleading. It could be taken as another thing for our to-do list. Detach from thoughts. But it's even more simple than that. It's not anything we have to do when we are absorbed in our practice, then there is detachment from thoughts. It's done through absorption in the practice, not as a task that we have to do. The practice does it for us. Same with cutting off sentiments, meaning getting bogged down in emotional states. No, when we are in some emotional state, which happens, of course, there's nothing we have to do to get rid of the emotional state. And we certainly don't want to cling to it. But we just, same thing, we go to the practice. And that's where freedom from the emotion comes. Non-attachment. He says, totally shed the obstructions of views and understanding so that you are like a person who has died the great death. Your breath is cut off and you arrive at great cessation and great rest on the fundamental ground. Your sense faculties have no inkling of this, and your consciousness and perceptions and sentiments and thoughts do not reach this far. The great death. This is nothing to be frightened of at all. Dying the great death just means detaching from self. Which is basically a thought. An aggregate of thoughts and memories and concepts, self-images and so forth. But to do so thoroughly detach from the self that we see through the self, and then to do so to the very bottom is what Yuan Wu means by dying the great death. He says, after that, in the cold ashes of the dead fire, it is clear everywhere, and among the stumps of the dead trees, everything is illuminated. Then you merge with solitary transcendence and reach unapproachable heights. You don't have to seek mind or seek Buddha anymore. You bump into them wherever you go, and they do not come from outside. You don't have to seek mind or Buddha anymore. You bump into them wherever you go. And so we're told that when the Buddha came to his great enlightenment, he said, I and all beings everywhere and the great earth are simultaneously enlightened. Everything is Buddha. Awareness everywhere. 10 directions, 3 worlds, all Buddhas, Bodhisattva, Mahasattvas. There is only Buddha nature, not Buddha nature and ego. There's only Buddha nature. No matter how many unsavory things we see about ourselves, it's just Buddha nature. Not two. Nothing is outside this Buddha nature. On the level of words, we can distinguish between truth and falseness, between our true nature and our ego nature. But this is just words. Underneath the words, there is just this Buddha mind, or better yet, just this. Still better. Continues, the hundreds and thousands of aspects and facets of enlightenment since time immemorial are just this. This is mind. There is no need to go on seeking mind. This is Buddha. Why keep struggling to seek Buddha? Or in language more people can relate to, why keep struggling to come to enlightenment? Monk asked the great Mazu, what is Buddha? Mazu said, this very mind is Buddha. This very mind is enlightenment. Another time, a monk asked him the same question. He said, not mind, not Buddha. How do we understand this contradiction? First, this very mind is Buddha. And then, he takes the other side. Not mine, not Buddha. The 6th patriarch in the famous story with the wind and the flag said, it's not the wind that moves, it's not the flag that moves, it is the mind that moves. And then Mumon takes issue with that. He says, it's not the wind that moves, it's not the flag that moves, it's not the mind that moves. The level of words, everything becomes confusing, contradictory. If you make slogans based on words and sprout interpretations based on objects, then you fall into the bag of antique curios, and you will never be able to find this true realm of absolute awareness beyond sentiments. At this stage, you are free to go forward in the wild field without choosing, picking up whatever comes to hand. The meaning of the ancestral teachers is clear in all that grows there. Here he may be drawing from the metaphor of the herding the ox, where the ox, which stands for mind, our true mind, keeps wandering off to savor the grasses or clover or whatever oxes eat, and you just pull it back. And it goes off again, and you pull it back. It's practice. And afterward, you go forward in the field without choosing, picking up whatever comes to hand. No problem. Ideas, concepts, words, these are to be used. It doesn't need to be a problem once we've seen through them. He says, what's more, the thickets of green bamboo and the masses of yellow flowers and the fences and walls and tiles and pebbles are inanimate things teaching the Dharma. The water birds and the groves of trees expound the truths of suffering, emptiness, and selflessness. Based on the one true reality, they extend objectless compassion, and from the great jewel light of nirvana, they reveal uncontrived, surpassingly wondrous powers. So the birds and the trees, he says, expound the truths of suffering, emptiness, and selflessness. These are what are called the three characteristics of existence. This is something that anyone on the path would not be hurt by remembering. The three characteristics of existence. Suffering, that's also the first of the Four Noble Truths, that suffering is pervasive. The second is emptiness or no self, that all things are without substance fundamentally. These are not the three characteristics of existence. Three characteristics are suffering, no self, and impermanence. And emptiness is a way of talking about impermanence. And selflessness. There is no separate selfhood to anything. Everything is interdependent. Everything co-arises. There's no thing apart from anything. Here's another letter. All things are set on a non-abiding basis. The non-abiding basis is based on non-abiding. If you can reach a thorough realization of this, then all things are one suchness, and you cannot find even the slightest sign of abiding. Here's another rich Buddhist word, non-abiding. This, again, goes back to this teaching of emptiness, or without nothing has any substance to it. Everything is shimmering. Everything is evanescent. We're deceived by our senses. We see things as solid and substantial and relatively permanent, but it's not true. And we have now the benefit of what the Buddha didn't have, which is, in his teachings, is quantum physics, modern physics. It's confirmed that everything that we think of as relatively permanent and substantial is energy. And mostly, like 99%, space. It gives the appearance of solidity. It gives the appearance of abiding. But there's no thing there to abide. It's energy. We are energy. We are shimmering. Processes. We're processes. This means we can change. We can evolve because we're not stuck with a self. We can reform ourselves, reshape ourselves. The mind, our emotional life, mental habits, none of it is fixed. What a relief. It's all mutable. Yung Chia, another earlier great Chinese master, he quotes Yung Chia, "Without leaving wherever you are, there is constant clarity." Saying we don't need to go anywhere to be immersed in this truth. And this perception is not limited to Zen. You see it in some poetry, Rilke, Rumi, the Sufi sage. You see it in Walt Whitman. I just ran across a passage by Kafka, Franz Kafka, in which he says, "You do not need to leave your room. Remain sitting at your table and listen. Do not even listen, simply wait. Do not even wait. Be quite still and solitary. The world will freely offer itself to you to be unmasked. It has no choice. It will roll in ecstasy at your feet." So it would seem that Kafka had this experience of no mind, no thought. He was blessed with this as a kind of a moment of grace that it came to him. We don't have to rely on grace. We have this incredible practice, this method by which we can, by and by, get free of our thoughts and have this world be unmasked. without leaving wherever you are, there is constant clarity. And then the one who says, no words come closer to the truth than these. If you start seeking, then we know that you are unable to see. Just cut off any duality between, quote, wherever you are and constant clarity, and make yourself peaceful and serene. Avoid concocting intellectual understanding and seeking. As soon as you seek, it is like grasping at shadows. What a fortune we have inherited in this practice, where we have a systematic way of accessing this clarity. Doesn't come easily. We know that. Doesn't come quickly for most of us. But if we persist at this time-tested ancient practice, simple practice, and stay with it, then the world can be ours. He again says, if you can come to grips with this and penetrate through, then what you see before your eyes will reach equilibrium, and the illusions that have afflicted you since time without beginning will be washed away. When there is continuous awareness from mind moment to mind moment, that's what's translated in Japan as nen. When there is continuous awareness from mind moment to mind moment, that does not leave anything out, and mundane reality and enlightened reality are not separate, then you will naturally become pure and fully ripe and meet the source on all sides. If anyone asks questions, you answer according to the question, and if there are no questions, you remain clear and still. Isn't this the essential guideline for really passing through birth and death to freedom? Hakuin, how can we be free from birth and death? The gateway to freedom is Zazen Samadhi. Now recite the four vows.